Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, Dan Friedel has a story on the world's first eye transplant. Gregory Stockel reports on a body of water in Hawaii that mysteriously turned pink. Andrew Smith and Faith Perlow have this week's health and lifestyle report on the increase of ketamine prescriptions. Later, Andrew and Jill Robbins present the lesson of the day. But first,
a hospital in New York City recently said it had successfully performed the world's first eye transplant, and the patient is doing well. New York University Langone Health said it performed the surgery last May. Hospital officials say it will be some time before it is known if the 46-year-old patient, Aaron James, will see with the new eye. But the transplant operation itself went well, and the eye looks healthy. James is an electrician in Hot Springs, Arkansas. He was hit in the face by a live electric wire while at work in 2021. James was severely injured and came close to dying. He lost much of his face and one arm as a result. Doctors removed James's left eye because the damage caused so much pain. James had many surgeries, including a face transplant. The rehabilitation was difficult. He had to breathe and eat through tubes. Doctors thought his face would look better if they could give him a donor eye. James says he cannot blink his eyelid, and he is not able to move the eye, but he said it feels good. "I'm getting sensation now," James said, adding, "You've got to start somewhere." He hopes doctors will learn something from his operation that can help the next person. Eye operations that include transplants of the cornea, the clear tissue in front of the eye, are common. They can treat some kinds of sight loss. But transplanting the entire eye, including its blood supply and optic nerve system, is brand new. Some people call it a moonshot, which is an activity that has the possibility of great profit but low chance of success. Successful eye transplants could help doctors cure blindness. Dr. Eduardo Rodriguez led the transplant team. He said, "We're not claiming that we are going to restore sight, but there is no doubt in my mind that we are one step closer." Some surgeons did not think the operation would go well. They worried the new eye would lose its fluid and look like a dried grape or raisin. But when Rodriguez examined James's new eye last month, it was full of fluid and looked as good as the one he was born with. And there was no sign of rejection of the new organ. Dr. Jeffrey Goldberg of Stanford University has long studied the idea of eye transplants. He called NYU's operation a validation of past transplant attempts using animals. Goldberg said the next step is to regrow the eye's optic nerve. He noted that animal studies are making progress toward that effort. The eye transplant was the first of its kind, but James's other major surgery was the face transplant. They are still rare. His was only the 19th performed in the U.S. James's new eye came from a donor in his 30s when he died, The donor also provided three other people with needed organs. James's operation took 21 hours. Doctors connected the donor's main optic nerve to the remains of James's optic nerve. The doctors also added stem cells to try to help repair the nerve. James is not able to open the new eye, and he wears a covering to protect it. But last month, he said he felt some sensation, which signaled growing nerves. He also said he could feel the doctor's touch when Rodriguez was examining his new eye. So far, the nerve is not fully healed, but doctors are surprised by its progress. Stephen Galletta is NYU's head of neurology. He said, "Only time will tell if James's nerve heals enough to permit sight." I'm Dan Friedel.
A small body of water in Hawaii has turned such a bright pink, it could have been used as a set for the movie Barbie. But the unusual color-changing event has some experts concerned. Scientists say extreme dry weather, or drought, may be the reason for the color. For now, they are warning people not to enter the body of water called a pond and not drink from it. Workers at the Kealia Pond National Wildlife Refuge on the island of Maui have been watching the pink water since October 30th. "I just got a report from somebody that was walking on the beach, and they called me up like, 'There's something weird going on over here,'" said Brett Wolf, who leads the refuge. Wolf was concerned the bright pink could be a sign of an event called an algae bloom. An algae bloom happens when simple plants called algae grow out of control and cause harmful effects on humans and animals. But lab tests found harmful algae was not causing the color. So investigators started looking at an organism called halobacteria as a possible cause. Halobacteria are a kind of single-celled organism that do well in bodies of water with high levels of salt. The amount of salt inside the Kealia Pond area is currently greater than 70 parts per thousand, which is twice the amount of salt in seawater. Wolf said the lab will need to perform DNA research in an effort to identify the organism. Researchers feel that Maui's drought is likely adding to the situation. Normally, another body of water called Waikapu Stream feeds into the pond and raises water levels there. But Wolf said that has not happened in a long time. When it rains, water flows from Waikapu Stream into the pond and then into the wider area that is now pink. This reduces the amount of salt and could possibly change the water's color. "That might be what makes it go away," Wolf said. None of the workers, or even some volunteers who have been around for 70 years, have seen the pond this color before. It has been through periods of drought and has had high amounts of salt before. But Wolf is not sure why the color has changed now. Visitors have come to the area after photos of the pink pond appeared on social media. The wildlife area is a wetland that protects endangered birds like the Hawaiian stilt and the Hawaiian coot. It also protects birds that are traveling to warmer areas in the winter. The water does not appear to be harming the birds, Wolf said. As a protected area, people are not supposed to enter the pond or let their animals in the water. But officials have issued a special warning for people not to enter the water or eat any fish caught there. I'm Gregory Stockel.
As doctors in the United States reduce their use of opioid painkillers, another drug is becoming popular, ketamine. For more than 50 years, ketamine has been used as a painkiller for patients having surgery. Now, for-profit medical centers and online health services have increasingly used the drug as a treatment for pain, depression, anxiety, and other conditions. However, some experts worry about the increased use of the drug. They say there is not much research about how well the drug works to control pain. And they worry that, like opioids, too many patients may get prescriptions for it, even though the drug carries safety and abuse risks.
Dr. Padma Gulur is a pain specialist at Duke University in the state of North Carolina. She is studying ketamine's use. She says there are few pain medicines that doctors can choose from. So, limited research showing possible benefits of ketamine can lead to a big increase in its use, she told the Associated Press. Gulur and her coworkers followed 300 patients receiving ketamine at Duke. They found that more than one-third of them reported important side effects that required professional help. These included hallucinations, troubling thoughts, and visual problems. Ketamine also did not reduce opioid prescriptions in the months following treatment, Gulur said. The research is under review for publication. Ketamine targets a brain chemical messenger called glutamate, which is thought to affect both pain and depression. A small amount of ketamine can produce strong effects on the brain, including hallucination. Daniel Bass lives in the state of Kentucky. He was given ketamine for pain related to a rare bone and joint disorder. He said the drug reduced his pain, but the visual effects of the drug were horrifying.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, approved ketamine 50 years ago as a painkiller for patients having surgery. The drug can now be purchased cheaply and prescribed by most doctors and some healthcare workers like nurses with less training. Since 2017, prescriptions for ketamine have increased more than 500%, Epic Research, a medical data company, said. pain was the top condition for which ketamine was prescribed, though depression has been rising quickly. Dr. David Majubi owns the Ketamine Healing Clinic in Los Angeles, California. He offers ketamine for several conditions, including pain, alcohol addiction, and anxiety. We want patients to disassociate or feel separate from their pain, depression, or anxiety, he said. If they feel like they're just sitting in the chair the whole time, we actually give them more. Doctors can buy ketamine for less than $100 per treatment. They then charge between $500 and $1,500 to inject patients with the drug. Online prescriptions have also become easier since COVID-19. So health centers face increasing competition from online health services like MindBloom and Joyous. These companies connect patients with doctors who can prescribe mixed versions of ketamine, like nasal spray and pills, remotely, and send it through the mail.
In May, health officials tried to end the policy permitting online prescriptions of high-risk drugs like ketamine and opioids. But they agreed to extend the policy through 2024, after pushback from online health companies and doctors. Dr. Samuel Wilkinson is a Yale University psychiatrist who prescribes ketamine and other drugs for depression. He says the current rules for prescribing ketamine are not very strict. There's good things about that and not so good things about that, he said. Last month, the FDA warned doctors and patients against mixed versions of ketamine. The agency said it does not regulate what goes into the mixtures and cannot say if they are safe. The warning followed a similar one last year about nasal spray versions of ketamine. For now, experts say it is unlikely health officials will go beyond their recent warnings about mixtures of the drug. Dr. Caleb Alexander is a drug safety researcher at Johns Hopkins University. He said controlling health centers is beyond the power government officials currently have. I'm Andrew Smith.
And I'm Faith Perlow.
Faith Perlow joins me now to talk more about the story. Hi, Faith.
Thanks, Dan. It's great to be back on the show with you.
Your story today was about doctors prescribing ketamine for conditions like pain, depression, and anxiety. Ketamine is somewhat controversial because it's known as a recreational club drug. It's also a dissociative. What does dissociative mean?
To disassociate means that you feel like you become separate or disconnected from your body and your reality. You start to question if things and feelings are real, or if you are real. So if a drug is dissociative, it makes you think and feel that your world is not real, and you disconnect from your body.
Ketamine prescriptions have greatly increased in the past several years. Why is that?
There are a couple reasons for this. Doctors have greatly reduced prescriptions of opioids for pain because of their high risk of addiction. And they're looking for alternative drugs to prescribe. Also, it's been much easier for people to get online prescriptions. Patients can simply make an online appointment with a doctor and get prescribed the drug remotely. Online health services make a lot of money doing this. But as with opioids, some doctors are concerned that ketamine is being prescribed too often, especially when there is limited research about the drug's effects, especially on depression and anxiety.
Thanks for answering my questions, Faith.
Thanks for having me back, Dan.
Is Anna Mateo.
And my name is Jill Robbins.
And I'm Andrew Smith.
You're listening to the lesson of the day on the Learning English Podcast. Welcome to the part of the show where we help you do more with our series, Let's Learn English. This series shows Anna Mateo in her work and life in Washington, D.C.
In a recent Lesson of the Day podcast, we talked about Anna trying to be a genie. That's spelled G-E-N-I-E. In Lesson 34 of the Let's Learn English series. A genie has special magical powers. Anna thinks these include the power to read people's minds. To read minds means to know what other people are thinking.
We should add that in Let's Learn English, Anna meets a genie who does have some magical powers. But this genie only gives Anna some special genie clothes. She does not give Anna magical powers.
Anna was dressing like a genie for Halloween, a popular tradition in the United States, celebrated on October 31st. People dress as scary creatures, such as monsters or ghosts, or as any other special thing or person.
Anna discovers she is not very good at reading people's minds. So at first, she uses the word might because she is not sure. But when Anna says might, this makes people worry about what will happen to them in the future. Let's listen to this part of Lesson 34.
Can you really read minds?
I might.
Well, today I will ask my girlfriend to marry me. What am I thinking?
Wait. Wait. You are thinking you might have a wedding very soon.
Might? Might? She won't say no, will she?
No, no! She will say yes!
I will have a wedding, won't I?
You will! You will!
Thanks. I think.
Good luck!
Anna had to predict or say what she thinks will happen in the future.
You know, Lesson 34 of Let's Learn English made me think about predictions and about chance, which means how likely it is something will or will not happen. And it reminded me of two conversations I recorded with Faith Perlow, who writes Ask a Teacher and Everyday Grammar articles on the Learning English website. Faith and I talked about making predictions.
Did she try to read your mind?
No, she's not a genie, but she is a teacher, and we made the recording to explain some expressions.
Oh, now I'm curious. Let's hear it.
Okay. Here's our first conversation.
Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Faith.
So, Andrew, do you have any plans for the weekend?
I do. I'm going to play tennis tomorrow.
You are? I think it's supposed to rain.
Really? I thought it was supposed to be good.
Let me check my phone. Okay, so it says there's a 30% chance in the morning and 90% later in the day.
Well, I play in the morning, so those are pretty good odds. Though the odds of me winning are not very good.
Why? Are you playing with somebody really good?
Yeah, he's good. I can practice with him fine, but in a match, I have to play my best, and he has to play kind of poorly for me to have a chance. So it's very unlikely I'll win, but it's still super fun either way.
Well, it sounds like you have 100% chance of fun.
That's right. As long as it doesn't rain.
And here's our second conversation.
So, Faith, I notice there really are a lot of ways to talk about what we think might happen in the future.
That's right. We're talking about what's likely to happen. So we talk about the odds or the chances.
Odds and chances are basically the same thing?
Yes. If we say, what are the odds of, or what are the chances of, we are asking how likely something is to happen.
And talking about the percent chance, math and science tend to use the word probability.
That's right. It's used a lot in the sciences and mathematics to talk more precisely about the chances.
So we can say something is probable or likely. Probable is an adjective. Or instead, we can say something will probably happen. Probably is an adverb. And we can talk about the probability of an event. Probability is a noun.
And I hope our listeners notice that we add the preposition of after the noun probability. We say the probability of something.
Just like we say the odds of something or the chances of something.
Well, Andrew, I hope this was helpful for our listeners.
Me too. Chances are, it was helpful for at least some people.
And what about your tennis game? How did it go?
Well, I said I was unlikely to win, and that prediction was correct.
But it was still super fun?
It was. But winning might be even more fun.
Ah, better luck next time.
Thanks. Though I think I need more than luck. I need to practice.
We all need to practice things we are learning or things that take skill, especially when you're learning a language.
Right, like learning English.
Yeah, and you know, speaking of predictions, we can also talk about the word weather.
You mean the rain?
No, not that kind of weather, spelled W-E-A-T-H-E-R. I mean the other word, spelled W-H-E-T-H-E-R. Like when we want to know whether or not something will happen.
Yes, and here's a good detail for people learning English to notice. It's more common to say the word if than whether. For example, we typically say, I want to know if it's going to rain.
But we can use weather when we want to clearly state two or more different possibilities. For example, we might say, I need to know whether my car has a problem with its battery or with its engine.
So, whether you find us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, or our website, learningenglish.voanews.com, we hope you have enjoyed the lesson of the day on the Learning English Podcast.
And thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Jill.
And I'm Andrew Smith.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.